You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Curled in the head and a goal! Sadio Mane!
Oh, it's given away. Poorly. Chance here. Jota, surely. 2-0. Oh, Jota, what a header that is. Sadio Mane, heavy touch. Ramsdale stays at home. The cross for Salah! It's Salah. Under Arnold, back post, 4-0, Minamino.
Right, well, it felt like a huge game for Liverpool, and they certainly delivered, didn't they? Back on track, superb fashion against Arsenal. And of course, the masterstroke was delivered by Mikel Arteta. It got them going. The Gunners were then taken apart. I'm Steve Hothersall. This is the Red Agenda, and with me today, James Pearce and football writer Stephen Beacom. James, to put this one into context, there was the defeat to West Ham, and then there was Chelsea winning earlier in the day. There was a certain amount of pressure on Liverpool. They simply had to win this.
They did, yeah. It felt like a really big night in the context of the season, because I think, you know, as you said, with Chelsea winning earlier on the day, you thought, you know, 7 points is a significant gap. They had to instantly reply and cut that back if they were serious about catching Tuchel's team. And I think also when you looked over your shoulder and realised that Arsenal on the back of that 10-game unbeaten run, you know, if they'd won at Anfield, they would have leapfrogged Liverpool, and Liverpool would have been outside the top four. And I think the alarm bells really would have been ringing on the back of what happened at West Ham and obviously Brighton before that. And you're never quite sure, are you? I think although you always back Klopp to get a reaction after a setback, it wasn't ideal, the fact that then players jetted off all around the world. You know, the squad only got back together on really the Wednesday, or the Thursday for the Brazilians, really, before the game. So it's not like he'd had a massive amount of time on the training pitch, but he managed to trigger the right response with a little bit of help from his opposite number, Mikel Arteta. And I thought the second half, that 45 minutes, was Liverpool's best 45 minutes of the season. I thought they were everything you've come to expect from a Jurgen Klopp team. You know, that mix of quality and pace and incision and creativity, mix with an unbelievable work rate.
Stephen, it was the best that we've seen, wasn't it, for a while? It was just, I mean, James summed it up there. So many elements, so many sort of Klopp bits that pieced together at the highest level in that second half.
It was exhilarating. It really was a joy to watch, boys. It took me back, actually, to the 1987-88 season, you know. And I was thinking to myself as I was watching Liverpool destroy Arsenal, we are just in the presence of greatness here. This is the most entertaining, dynamic side Liverpool have ever put out since 1987-88. And you could almost say that it's better than that 87-88 team. And what they achieved on Saturday was remind us what Liverpool Football Club's all about under Jurgen Klopp. I loved the fact that Klopp and Arteta went toe-to-toe on the touchline. And it was as if Arteta poked the bear, because Klopp got up, he was backing his team to the hilt, he was backing Sadio Mane. All of a sudden you could sense a change in the crowd and the atmosphere. The cop was going at it, and the players responded. The first goal was vital before half time, and as James pointed out, that second half, it was incredible. It was like the Arsenal players, they were surrounded by a swarm of bees, and they just couldn't get away. And then Liverpool stung them. And Jota's second goal was pure class. The composure he showed for that was magnificent. And then it was a question of how many. And I must say, the third goal scored by Salah was one of the best team goals I've seen in a long, long time. How often is it that you see two headers in a build-up to a team goal? And that's what we got for Salah's brilliant finish. I thought it was wonderful to watch. And almost a template of how Liverpool go about the rest of the season.
You mentioned the fireworks on the touchline. For anyone who was there, maybe even watching on the telly, I don't know, but inside the stadium, it was brilliant. My sources tell me that Klopp's reaction to Arteta was effectively a little bit of a build-up to the fact that Arteta had just appealed for everything in the game. Because I was a bit surprised, James, I don't know about you, with the way that Klopp got riled.
Yeah, I think, but it was interesting to listen to Klopp afterwards. I think he almost sensed there's a bit of a pattern there with teams and managers almost trying to get about Sadio Mane and thinking that you can upset him, you can ruffle his feathers and try and get him into hot water with officials. We've seen it a number of times already this season, you know, Atletico Madrid being the most obvious example. And I don't know what Mikel Arteta was doing, to be honest, because I can only think he thought that Mane, as he went up for that aerial challenge, had caught the defender with an elbow, which clearly he hadn't. I don't think it was even really a foul.
It wasn't.
So to react in the way he did was absolutely ludicrous. And clearly, you know, when another manager reacts like that, he was, you know, very confrontational, the way he went towards Klopp, and obviously the fourth official has to step in between them. You know, Klopp obviously was just fighting his corner and making sure that, you know, he didn't want the referee to be influenced by Arteta's antics. But in the big picture of the game, it was crazy from Arteta, because I actually thought, you know, the people I was sat with in the press box, we were saying after 25 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, this is as well as Arsenal have played at Anfield in years. They look well drilled, you know, that the crowd had gone quiet. You know, Liverpool weren't really creating much. You thought, this is going to be a tough game. They're going to take some breaking down here. If you're Arsenal, you know full well, a big part of that game plan surely was starting well, being solid, and quieting the fans down. And they tick those boxes. Yet Arteta doing that, just suddenly, you know, it was like lighting the fuse paper, wasn't it? The whole place came alive. Anfield became a bear pit where before it had been quiet. And you could sense, you know, I think Oxlade-Chamberlain even talked about it after the game when he spoke to the TV. He said that, you know, the players fed off that energy from the stands, and suddenly Liverpool were a different team after that. You know, I think there was that Fabinho sliding challenge, I think, on Aubameyang not long after as well, that also, you know, cranked up the decibel levels a few notches further. And if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be absolutely fuming with Arteta for that, because he did rile Liverpool into life. And then, you know, once that had happened, it was an incredibly one-sided contest. I mean, I know, you know, Arsenal have had some real chasing defeats at Anfield in recent years, and that was another one for the collection. But when you put it in the context that they were 10 games unbeaten and everyone was talking about the praise being showered on Arteta for turning things around, but for Ramsdale, that would have been 7 or 8-0. Like, the amount of clear-cut chances Liverpool had. And it all stemmed from that flashpoint on the touchline, because usually you're looking for a bit of inspiration from Salah or Mane to get you going. But yeah, not very often it's the opposition manager who does it for you.
He's got no excuse, really, Stephen. He should know better. He's obviously played on Merseyside for a long time. He's more than aware of how Anfield can actually affect things. We've heard the greatest managers in the world, like Sir Alex and Pep Guardiola, talk about the difference Anfield can make. It seems like a bit of madness from Arteta, what he did.
I would go as far to say, boys, that Arteta got his biggest managerial lesson in his career to date at Anfield on Saturday night, because he will know never ever to do that again at Anfield, or any away ground for that matter, because as soon as he did that, his team were basically defeated. It wasn't long after that Mane scored the opening goal from another wonderful delivery from Trent Alexander-Arnold. And from there, Liverpool just took control. The second half, Arsenal, yeah, they didn't help themselves by constantly giving the ball away. But that was all to do with Liverpool's high press. And Liverpool just destroyed that team, who were on a really good run. So a real confidence blow to Arsenal. But frankly, who cares? This was all about Liverpool Football Club getting back into the groove again, because that West Ham defeat, for me, it was a tough one to take. And I'm certain for the players and Jurgen Klopp, it was a tough one to take. But they got back on the horse, and now they can ride on it and hopefully go on a very, very long unbeaten run and a winning run from here until Christmas, certainly in the league anyway, because Manchester City and Chelsea show no signs of slipping up at this moment in time.
Yeah, so vital. Let's have a look at those goals then. The first one, I mean, a couple of great elements. Trent, another assist. I mean, the lad, at the age he's at, James, It's ridiculous, the stats in terms of assists that he's clocking up so early on in his career.
I think sometimes you can almost take it for granted, can't you? But then, you know, when you take a step back and you look at those numbers, for someone so young to have already now gone past, what is it, a half century of assists for Liverpool, when you think we're talking about a right back as well, for me it makes redundant this debate that seems to come up quite regularly about whether he is somehow wasted at right back and whether he should be playing centre midfield. And because I just think you want him in those wide areas to deliver those balls in. And I think he's been in fantastic form all this season. I think by his own admission, you know, last season wasn't great in patches. I think, you know, clearly he suffered where, you know, he had COVID, he had injury problems. It was very stop-start. You know, there was all the noise around him in terms of his England place, you know, but, you know, from the heartache of picking up that thigh injury, which meant he missed the Euros, I think in terms of the long term, looking ahead towards this season, it actually did him a real favour, having that proper break and then having a proper full pre-season. And now we're seeing Trent Alexander-Arnold back to his absolute brilliant best. And, you know, there is no better right back in world football for me. He's such a complete footballer. And I don't, sometimes, especially, you know, after something like at West Ham, people focus on, you know, is his defensive side of his game good enough? And it's like, well, you've got to bear in mind the job that Klopp gives him to do. Klopp, he is given that license to attack. He's told to leave that space in behind at times. It's a high risk, high reward strategy that he is absolutely perfect for. And the quality of the ball in. Obviously for the first goal, people will question the marking, which wasn't great. You know, Sadio Mane's not exactly the biggest fella to have a free header like that. But yeah, the delivery was absolutely pinpoint. And the same with the way in which Trent put the fourth on an absolute plate for Minamino, who, you know, he's waited a long time, Minamino, for that first goal actually at Anfield, with his previous goals coming on the road. You know, he couldn't have wished for a better first touch.
Marley's actually got a pretty good history of heading goals, hasn't he? Not the biggest fella, but actually give him something, and he generally scores with his head. Two assists. I think there's too much, Stephen, made of this idea that Trent's not a great defender. I don't think he's necessarily that bad a defender. I think, like James says, his job is something else.
I actually think Trent's a better defender than people give him credit for. I think they're just looking for a stick to beat him in many respects. But whenever I think of Trent Alexander-Arnold, I think of the great players who have performed in that area of the pitch and delivered time after time. You're looking at Steven Gerrard from the right-hand side, was just wonderful. David Beckham was brilliant at it as well. Kevin De Bruyne in today's game, sensational at it. But Trent Alexander-Arnold is up there with them, in my opinion. And the thing that I love about Alexander-Arnold is he can cross so many different ways. He can curl the ball in from deeper. When he's on the byline, he can whip it across so someone's coming in the back post. This isn't a guy who just delivers fantastic crosses. This is a player who makes right decisions time after time after time. He is a brilliantly creative mind of a footballer, as well as just a wonderful athlete. And I'm not sure he actually gets the credit sometimes he deserves outside of Liverpool Football Club, because what this guy is doing is rewriting how a right back should play football. That is how good he is. He's transforming that position. And we're lucky at this moment in time, not just to have Alexander-Arnold, but also Andy Robertson on the other side. For me, there's not a better pair of fullbacks in world football. They almost drive each other on. Robertson's a different type. You know, you watch him and he's driving forward in these 30, 40, 50 yard runs. Alexander-Arnold gets the ball and his first thought is, right, I'm going to whip this in the box for one of the strikers coming in. And what a tool it is for Klopp to have both those players in his squad at the same time. It's just incredible. And whenever they are at the top of their game, that's when Liverpool are at the top of their game. So, long live Alexander-Arnold, in my opinion. And I don't know if he listens to podcasts, but you see, whenever people go on, Trent, about your defensive capabilities, you're a far better defender than what people give you credit for. And right now, you are the best and most consistent assist king in world football.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go to the Jota goal. Awful moment for Tavares, the rookie Arsenal player, but Jota then seemed to walk the ball across the penalty area, James. Put White on the floor. Ramsdale, we've mentioned, he was great in the game, but, you know, he was sent the wrong way. Lovely goal. And just demonstrates the value of, again, of Diogo Jota.
Yeah. I must admit, I thought he's been underwhelming at times in the first few months of this season. I think he set such incredible standards when he first joined the club last season, and his form has been a bit patchy, but I thought Saturday was an important step forward for him. You're right, he took that goal brilliantly. I mean, it was how ice cool and composed he was, because, you know, he wouldn't have expected to have suddenly received the ball in that area. I mean, it was a inexplicable defensive mistake.
He seems to score goals at important moments.
Yeah. I think when you look at his goals for Liverpool, they, you know, very few of them have been kind of the third or the fourth or the fifth in kind of routes. It's they have been at important times, and that was a big time, because you know, clearly only 1-0, Arteta would have obviously done a lot of talking at half time about how they could get back in the game, and that really killed it. And yeah, I think everyone loved the way that that he just skipped around a couple and slotted it in that manner. And of course, he was heavily involved in the third goal as well, with that header that was absolutely perfect into the path of Sadio Mane, who teed up Mo Salah. So, really timely, I thought, that from Jota, especially with Firmino still being out for a period of time. Of course, it, you know, places more responsibility on his shoulders. And then even, you know, looking further ahead to January, when, you know, there's going to be no Salah and no Mane, you know, Liverpool desperately need Diogo Jota absolutely operating at the peak of his powers. So let's hope that the weekend is the start of a real purple patch for him.
Lots of good displays. We'll get to the Ox in a moment, because you've written about him. If people want to have a look at that on The Athletic, it's there now. I want to start with Thiago. You know, we've seen bits of brilliance from him. We're waiting for some consistent displays. I just thought he was excellent, Stephen, at the weekend. His passing, his ability to spot the right pass to get Liverpool going forward at the right times. And I think, like most Liverpool fans, I just want to see him do this consistently.
He's a class act, Steve. In modern day parlance, he's what they call a baller, because he controls a football. He could control a football coming out from the moon, and he could still find the right pass. There's no question about that. I'm a bit like you, though. I think he's been inconsistent at times, and I would love to see him step up. It's been really interesting since Xavi became Barcelona manager that there's been links now to him moving to Barcelona, so it'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. I do think Thiago is a much better player for Liverpool when Fabinho's beside him. I love Fabinho. I just think he's a comfort blanket for the team. You can just wrap yourself around him and know that everything's going to be nice and warm and okay, life's going to be grand. And I thought his performance against Arsenal was probably the pick of the bunch, actually. It was between him and Salah and Trent for me, who was the most influential player on the pitch. But I'd love to see Thiago given a run with Fabinho. And I know you said we'll talk about the Ox. I got texts from friends before the match saying they were worried about this midfield, but with nothing to worry about at all, because Oxlade-Chamberlain was excellent on the night, and it's going to be a compelling watch to see how Jurgen D deals with the midfield, because he still has Jordan Henderson to come back in as well. But it would be hard to leave out any of the three midfielders who played so well against Arsenal on Saturday night.
I think you said, James, a couple of weeks ago, it would take the Ox a few games to get back into the pattern and into the run, because we were talking about his game time. And it almost feels like we're getting to this point now where he knows his value. He knows his quality and how good he is. And that performance there, yeah, I know he got taken off, but actually, I think he'd have had a big smile on his face.
Yeah, it was a very different type of substitution, wasn't it, to maybe some of the ones that the Oxlade had experienced previously, because it wasn't a case of him not doing the job that Klopp has asked for and fading and Klopp needing to try something new. I think it was very much, you know, you've absolutely ran yourself into the ground here. You've done your job. The game is long since won. You put your feet up and have a breather. Yeah, I thought that was as well as Oxlade-Chamberlain's played for Liverpool for a long, long time. And I do feel for him a bit, because I think he has been in that vicious circle where I think when he has played, certainly in kind of the last 12 months, that, you know, he's looked rusty. He's looked like someone who's trying too hard to impress. He's looked like someone that needs to be playing more regularly to get up to speed. Yet he hasn't contributed enough to warrant that run in the team. You go right back to that horrific knee injury he suffered against Roma in, what was it, early May 2018. And I would say he's never quite got back to those heights. I think there were little moments in probably 1920 in the Premier League and the Champions League when he reminded everyone of the abundance of quality he's got. But then, you know, the knee injury wrecked another knee injury wrecked the first half of last season. And then, you know, I think he only played something like 240 minutes of Premier League football last season. You know, for someone of his calibre, and, you know, he's obviously a significant wage earner as well, you know, you're thinking, well, hang on a minute, you know, Liverpool should be getting more from you. And, you know, I'm sure he would be the first to admit that he expected more from himself. So fate has kind of handed him, it's actually done him a little favour maybe in recent weeks with the injury situation, meaning he has had more chances. I thought he did well against Atletico Madrid at home. You know, wasn't great, I didn't think, against Brighton. Same away at West Ham. So you're thinking, you know, as Stephen said, you know, I was speaking to people before the game on Saturday, and that's, you know, everyone was talking about the midfield and saying, oh, you know, no Henderson. You know, I do worry about Oxlade. And I thought he delivered the perfect response to that. And now he has to build on it. You know, the consistency is the big thing for Oxlade-Chamberlain now. You know, can he keep doing it? Can he prove that he deserves to be an integral part of that midfield? Because, you know, at the moment, Klopp is almost down to the bare bones in that department. But the situation will change in the next few weeks. You know, you've got Keita coming back, Milner coming back, Curtis Jones as well. So, obviously, Henderson came off the bench on the weekend. So, it's a pivotal period in Oxlade-Chamberlain's career. You know, he's down to the last 18 months of his deal. You know, at the age of 28, we should be talking about him as a player who's reaching his absolute peak. Yet, I think the next 6 months is massive for him in terms of proving that he deserves to be at Liverpool, you know, for a number of years to come and try and earn himself a new deal.
He's got a chance to redefine the opinion of fans and his involvement as well, hasn't he? Obviously, that you looked at Liverpool's bench and you're thinking to yourself, there clearly is quite a few players missing at the moment, Stephen. There's a few youngsters on the bench, which is great. And obviously, Tyler Morton came on. Massive moment for him, really, making his Premier League bow. But you do think it is a side that, you know, Jürgen's still got those injury issues to deal with.
Yeah, and that's what made the result against Arsenal and the performance even more impressive. Because the squad did look a little light. There's no question about that. What I would say is, though, that what a moment for Tyler Morton. Whenever you were teenagers, and I'm the same, we dreamt about playing for Liverpool Football Club. Coming on at a packed Anfield, the roar of the crowd, and you're 4-0 up. Does it really get any better than that for that kid? He's going to remember that. His family are going to remember that for the rest of time. And I hope that it inspires him to go on and make many more appearances for the football club. Obviously, he's played in the League Cup, but to come on in the Premier League against an iconic football club like Arsenal, just hear that reception that he received from the fans on Saturday night. It was his dreams coming true and then some, you know. So it was a lovely moment. I love to see young players coming through. I hope one day to see Conor Bradley from Northern Ireland play in the Premier League. I've no doubt he has the talent, the application and the attitude to do that down the line. But yes, the squad, once Liverpool get some injuries, and we have some certainly in midfield at this moment in time, when you look at the bench, you think, right, who can come on there and change the game? When I was growing up, I used to love flash players. The older I get, the more I enjoy watching reliable players and durable players. And I think that's a case in my life as well. I love reliability now as much as I love entertainment sometimes. James Milner, he gives you reliability. You ask him to do a job anywhere, he's going to do that. So it's fantastic that James is saying he's coming back very soon. And I hope that Oxlade-Chamberlain in time can give us that. He's been incredibly unlucky with injuries. But I do believe whenever Oxlade-Chamberlain gets 10, 15 games behind him in succession, he's a different animal. He's a completely different animal. And I genuinely thought on Saturday night, this was a player putting his hand up and saying, Jurgen, I'm your man. And now he has to stick to those types of performance levels. And I hope he gets another shot at Porto in midweek, because he's already delivered big style on European nights at Anfield previously. And it would be fantastic for his confidence to see him score again. He's a brilliant guy, Oxlade-Chamberlain, from everyone that I've heard, in terms of what he's like in the dressing room, what he's like with the fans. And he's the type of person that you want to succeed at Liverpool. He's obviously won trophies and medals in the last few years, but I'm certain that he'll want to become a focal point of the team going forward. He certainly has the ability. All he needs now is the chance.
Yeah, I spent some time with him a couple of weeks ago, and he's very much determined and focused on Liverpool. And I don't think that the idea of moving away is even in his head. He still believes he's still got some big years ahead of him.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Let's look at the wider picture of the league. We've got to mention Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, James. And I thought it was an interesting tweet from Si, who will be back on the pod in the next couple of pods, who tweeted yesterday, assuming United won't win the league this season, it'll be 9 years since their last. Makes me think of Liverpool between 1990 and 1999. But then it took Liverpool 21 years to deliver what everyone wanted. Really hard to reclaim what once seemed so easy. Manchester United, I know we've all, you know, done the Ollie's at the wheel thing for quite a while now. Obviously, they've made the change, but there's still no sort of definitive path they're going down.
No, that's the thing. I think it's a mess, isn't it? I think when you look at it from the outside in terms of the lack of, I think, footballing nous in the hierarchy in terms of, you know, right from the top down, whether their fans even have faith in the people making these decisions to get it right in terms of the next manager. And certainly, you know, I don't think any Liverpool fan was complaining that Solskjaer was allowed to stay in the job so long. But I think from the outside, it was just crystal clear, wasn't it? They were bumbling along. And they were going to occasionally have decent results, as we've seen, because you look at the quality in that squad. You know, anyone could manage that squad at times and get wins because of the individual quality. But when you look at the inability to even do the basics right defensively, you know, what an absolute shambles they were at Old Trafford when Liverpool absolutely destroyed them. And, you know, just how one-sided the Manchester derby was. And, you know, I couldn't believe that Solskjaer survived the Liverpool game. I couldn't. No, but when he survived the Manchester derby as well, you think, well, he's almost bulletproof. But, you know, obviously that heavy defeat to Watford finished him off. Yeah, you know, Simon's right. You know, you can take success for granted, and then, you know, and even, you know, a couple of years, and you think, well, it's only a couple of years, and then 5 turns into 10, and 10 turns into 15, and, you know, it's because the other thing with United, it's not through a lack of resources, is it? It's not like a. It's not a, you know, a Hicks and Gillette situation where there's a lack of investment in the squad. You know, they spent an absolute fortune in the summer. You know, with you know, the money that they've, the outlay to bring in Ronaldo, and when you take into account his wages, you know, Varane, Sancho, you know, Van der Beek, who, you know, hardly played from when he came in the year before. So there's been so much money thrown at it. Yet, you know, they've looked an absolute million miles away, haven't they? I think Solskjaer, on a human level, you had to feel some degree of sympathy for him, you know, watching that goodbye chat, which I thought was a little bit weird. I thought, you know, there was some strange old comments in there about, you know, how they're ready to kick on and the foundations are in place. And you're like, I'm just not quite sure how you can possibly claim that after the run of results that United have had. But yeah, they are a long way short at the moment. Yeah, I don't think anyone of a Liverpool persuasion will be feeling much sympathy. But, you know, Liverpool were there once themselves, weren't they? And I think, if anything, it makes you appreciate what Liverpool have got. It makes you appreciate the structure, the stability, you know, the, you know, from the ownership to the sporting director to the manager to the coaches to, you know, the attitude of the players in the dressing room as well. You know, the way in which I think Liverpool players do take responsibility. There's, you know, when things aren't great, there isn't, you know, finger pointing and all the rest of it. There's no cliques and little breakaway groups. It, yeah, it certainly makes you appreciate what you've got when one of your biggest rivals is in a mess like that.
Yeah, I was just going to get to that point, Stephen. It does make you think. It took Liverpool a long time to get back to a situation where they understood what path they needed to follow.
It really is horrific to think back to the 90s. Liverpool started the 90s as champions and ended it watching Manchester United win the treble and we were all at sea. James is right. I don't think Liverpool fans will have any sympathy for Manchester United right now, because there was none coming the other way, I can assure you of that, back then. But when Liverpool appointed Jurgen Klopp, that was the textbook way to do this in terms of changing a manager. They identified that Brendan Rodgers wasn't the man to take the club forward, and they were very quick in their dealing with him, and then they brought in Jurgen Klopp, and look at the success that has brought. Compare that to the ham-fisted and shambolic way that the Manchester United board are dealing with this situation. I am right in saying this, aren't I, that in their statement yesterday, Manchester United said that they would appoint Michael Carrick as effectively a caretaker manager. Then they were going to get in an interim manager, and then they were going to get in their actual manager at the end of the season in the summer. Now, this is Manchester United. No matter what we think of them as Liverpool fans, even like the most Mickey Mouse football club you could think of, wouldn't go round the houses like that. You know, Manchester United are a sporting institution around the world. They should be looked up to in the way they deal with things like this. And everyone's saying now, this is completely and utterly shambolic, and they're right. And where Manchester United go from here, we shall see. It wouldn't surprise me if Brendan Rodgers becomes the manager. It wouldn't surprise me if Pochettino becomes the manager. It would be interesting to see how the Liverpool fans would react to Brendan becoming the boss. Knowing him as I do, he would relish that opportunity. And perhaps they're waiting until the summer before they can get him. We shall find out in the coming months. But that would certainly be interesting, wouldn't it, boys, if Brendan Rodgers became Manchester United manager, having been the boss at Anfield for some time.
Waiting to see what happens. Let's just finish the pod on a piece you've written, James. Brilliant, because obviously, you know, we've gone back 20 years there. And actually 20 years ago was the Liverpool treble. And you've done a piece with perhaps an unsung hero of those years, which is Stefan Honcho. And if you talk of formidable centre-half partnerships in the Premier League, well, Honcho and Hoopier has to be amongst the top two, has to be, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%, yeah. Especially when you think back to, you know, obviously, I think Hippier came in first, didn't he? I think the month before in, 99? And, you know, he was, 2.5 million quid from Wilhelm II. And I think in the month later, Honcho was 3.5 million, having just been relegated with Blackburn. So, yeah, it was fascinating having to catch up with him. He lives in Geneva now. He was a manager for a number of years in Switzerland, but has been out of that for about the last 12 months. He's now working as a pundit on Swiss TV. Still absolutely loves Liverpool. And fascinating talking to him about that partnership with Hippier. He said it was he said it was just one of those things that absolutely clicked from day one. He said, you know, it wasn't something they really worked at. He said, you know, they just seemed to really complement each other well. The other one always seemed to know what the other one was going to do. And Henchoz was, I think he was definitely kind of an unsung hero of that period, and certainly that remarkable treble winning season. You know, he was certainly a quiet fella during his playing career, and he wasn't someone to shout about it. He was quite happy to, I think, go under the radar. But fantastic servant to Liverpool for a number of years. It was, I'd forgotten, to be honest, till he actually brought it up, that he left only 4 months before Istanbul, and he said he must admit he was absolutely kicking himself, sat on his own in a Glasgow hotel room, not getting a game for Celtic, when watching his old teammates lift that trophy, because it was him who instigated that move. He could have stayed put and been part of that occasion, but as Stefan Honcho, like probably most of us back then in that January, I think no one in their wildest dreams thought that season was going to end with Champions League glory in Istanbul. And obviously, since Benitez had replaced Houllier the previous summer, Henchoz had kind of fallen out of favour. Of course, Jamie Carragher had kind of gone, become a permanent fixture at centre-half alongside Hippier. But great guy, Honcho. And
got away with a couple of massive handballs, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah, well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think he'd be the first to admit that, I think even in the League Cup final, he gave away the penalty, didn't he, in the last minute against Birmingham, which, because Liverpool won the shootout, you kind of, that gets forgotten, where, imagine if that had gone the other way, you'd have been the villain. And the same in that FA Cup final against Arsenal. It was funny him saying that still wherever he goes, whether it's in the airport, on holiday, on a sun lounger, or in a stadium, he has Arsenal fans coming up to him saying that your save at Cardiff cost us the FA Cup. Because I watched it back, and it's still hard to believe that the referee and the linesman didn't spot it and actually gave a goal kick when it was a fantastic goal line save from Honcho. And of course, in this age with VAR, it would have been a red card and a penalty, and how different history would have been. I'm sure we wouldn't be talking about that game being the Michael Owen final. There would have been no treble. Liverpool would have gone into the UEFA Cup final on a downer. Would they have even beaten Charlton the following weekend to qualify for the Champions League? So, one of those sliding door moments. And, I think what made me feel really old was him telling me that his son is now playing in the UEFA Youth League for young boys. So his son, Sonny, is a very highly rated 16-year-old centre-half. He said he's already taller than his dad, quicker than his dad ever was. So, I think that's one to keep an eye on.
You're feeling really old. Stephen's talking about being middle-aged and wanting just consistency now. Goodness me. Boys, thank you very much. Stephen Beacom, great to have you on as always. James Pearce as well. Check out James's piece, I should say, on Stefan Honcho. It's a really good read, and put a smile on my face anyway. Thanks very much for listening to the pod, and of course, there'll be another Red Agenda right round the corner. We'll see you for that soon.